Welcome to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My next guest is an improviser, teacher, and director at the Second City. He's one of the first teachers I've ever had at Second City. Tim O'Malley. What a life Tim O'Malley has had in comedy. He was on stage at Second City in the 80s with Chris Farley and Steve Carell and Bob Odenkirk, just to name a few. And he trained closely with the late improv legend Del Close. But you know what? It wasn't just highlights for Tim. There were a lot of lowlights, too. During that time, he struggled with drugs and alcohol and addiction. And Tim's been sober coming up on 20 years now. And he took that experience, those experiences of addiction, and channeled it into his own show, God Show, which ran to critical acclaim back in 2003. Tim is now a fixture on the Chicago comedy scene, not only teaching improv, but now directing improv. He's directing the new group, young group, Scantron, which will perform two shows at the Marty DeMott Theater on February 6th and the 13th. Tim O'Malley, welcome to The Download.
Thank you, Justin. Great to be here.
Good to see you.
And congratulations. It's just great to see you sitting in
You know what's great about you is you're a Chicago kid.
Yeah.
You grew up in Beverly.
Right.
And made your way up to Second City. I mean, a lot of people come in from other places and they come here to study comedy. But you came from Chicago. What brought you as a Chicagoan to the Second City?
Well, you know, first of all, we got to put time context. There was, you know, no classes, right? There was Del's class and there was Donnie's class.
Right.
And you had to be, like, invited into the class.
This was what? This was, like, mid-80s?
1979,
1980.
Okay. So, you know, I take one class with Judy Morgan up at Players Workshop, and she says to me, you guys got to go down to see Del Close. You know, you guys got to try to get into his class. You know, I'm a Chicagoan, and I'm like, isn't Second City like some tourist trap? You know what I mean? What do I want? You know, I'll just be funny in front of a band because I was a singer in college. You know, and someone will find me and it'll just happen, you know. And this girl says, no, you got to study, you got to learn, you got to figure it out. And she brings me to the class and I watch for like 5 weeks. And then you get this private interview with Del over at the Earl of Old Town. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what have you read and why do you want to be an actor? And, you know, he's smoking and coughing. And, you know, so he does a little interview with you. And all I had read was like Something Wonderful Right Away and Bag Time. You know, which is the story of, you know, Old Town in the old days. And, you know, and just told him that I liked Buckminster Fuller and, some things I thought might, you know, really catch his interest. And he's like, all right, well, come back next week and we'll all vote and decide whether you are going to be in the class.
And it wasn't even about money. It was just more about whether or not they liked you.
Yeah. But I happened to pass the guy that took the money for the class in a bag of mushrooms to hand to Del. And I was accepted that day.
Talk about your time with Del Close, because that is a very glorified legend in Chicago improv. The people who had a chance to have these experiences in the early 80s with Del Close, you know, talk very fondly of him. But there's a lot that goes into that. What was it like for you?
Well, you know, it was scary because, you know, Del's old fashioned kind of like get on stage. I don't know what I want. You know, that's not it. Get off stage. Kind of barking orders and, you know, but half an hour of stories before we get one scene up and then. It was very intimidating, you know. And then if you, like, did anything at someone's expense, you know, you'd be, you know, told, okay, you're not going to be in any scenes for 2 weeks. You got to sit in the upper level or, like, you'd be punished, you know, and stuff like that. So, you know, it was scary, intimidating, you know. You know, we looked up to him like, you know, like our own little idol. So, this, you know, the stories of drugs and drug use and being close to the dark side, you know, it's reminiscent of, you know, going to the O'Neill on the walls.
Yeah,
opiate, you know, addicted dead novelists, you know. Same kind of thing where we're going to look up to all the the drug addicted, you know, geniuses. So,
well, that was kind of his MO, right? I mean, he was this genius that he had brought. He wanted to take the idea of improv and take it from what you did off stage to generate material, and he said, no, we're going to make this the art form that people come to see.
Yeah, he developed that right as I was taking classes with him.
But people also know him to be, you know, a little bit of a recluse, and he did have quite a connection to heavy drug use.
Yeah.
And that affected you.
Yeah, I mean, just the talk of it, you know, just, you know, intrigued me because I was already doing coke and drinking a lot. And so we'd have these tripping parties where he'd, you know, send us out on a quest. You know, everyone in the class would do acid except for like maybe one or two straight actors. And then we'd all meet back at Del's house and talk about the incredible connections of the things we saw. And, you know, we'd get one word. He'd hand out a slip of paper and he'd give you one word. Now follow that word. And then we'd all meet back at his house. And then he would be like, it's genius. You know, and then he'd try to raise Jerry Garcia, you know, from the dead or, you know, it was just all drug-addled bullish, you know.
No, but I mean, that's,
but we thought it was.
But you thought it was great, and you're talking about. I mean, at this time, who? I mean, people that came out of Del Close's tutelage, you, Chris Farley, other people like that who went in and learned how to do improv.
But at the same time, we were alcoholic drug addicts. We latched onto that dark thing. You know that you have to be in pain to create great work. You know what I mean? And so that whole idea touched, you know, only the alcoholic mind or drug addict mind kind of picked up on that message. Mm-hmm. But I remember one time, you know, him saying, you know, the most pure part of art is that line between life and death. So we try to get there. You know what I mean? And, you know, so like the idea of, you know, drug use and alcohol use, you know, was our way to find that dark place, you know.
Now, you took the class with Del, and then you had your success at Second City. You went on to perform on the main stage with a lot of great actors that I mentioned before. You know, but talk about that time, because you were still having issues with drug and alcohol.
Yeah, they were building.
Now you're in front of the lights. Now, you know, their career's on the line. Now there's Saturday Night Live coming to look at you guys. Talk about that experience.
You know, when Joyce came backstage and said, I'm moving you up to the main stage, you know, it was like the best day of my life, because I had been working towards that for, you know, like 5 years. I had toured. I had been at Second City Northwest. It was wonderful. And then, you know, you get into the starting to perform, and then you find that business competition that goes on among your teammates, you know, and some guys are doing well outside doing commercials and already mm-hmm. auditioning for stuff, and I'm putting all my money into, you know, this stage is going to propel me to my goal, SNL, you know. And that was my mistake, was making, you know, one goal, you know.
Yeah, I got to make it here, or this is or self-validation, right?
Right, and right. So, you know, SNL would send a group of six or seven reviewers to watch you, and then they'd come like three times, and it'd be whittled down to like three people. In the cast where Tim Meadows and Chris got hired, like, there was one really nice guy, but he kept whispering to me, you got really good points. You know, I mean, you're scoring really high. So I'm thinking everything's going to go great, you know. And then they, you know, they meet with me and tell me, you know, we're going to go with Tim and Chris. And if you ever want to call us, you know, give us a call sometime, you know, if you want to maybe submit some scripts, you know. And so it was just this big letdown. And I never thought that wouldn't happen. It's just, it's obsessive thinking, or I don't know, you know, how you want to characterize it.
Yeah, obviously at that time, and you had drug and alcohol issues, and obviously the rejection propelled that or continued that, explodes. At what point was rock bottom? What was the point when you said, you know what, man, I got to sober up?
It's 3 years later. You know, I leave downtown, I move in with my dad after my mom dies, and I'm living in his basement. I'm sitting behind a bar as a bartender, you know, and some guy said, you used to be big time, didn't you? Now you're nothing. And getting arrested for crack and stuff like that, and a cop, you know, saying, if you don't go to jail, you're not going to remember this. Slowly but surely, it was just like, my life's gone. It's gone. You know what I mean? I hadn't been on stage in 3 years. I get a phone call from my little sister who just begs me to get sober, because I had stolen money from her for crack while she was home for Christmas, and she just calls crying and begs me to get help. And for some reason, she got through to me that day. And I had a bunch of numbers that my dad had gathered from people in recovery, a doctor. I made a call. A week later, I was at Gateway Lake Villa, and then something happened to me while I was up there. I was like, if I don't stay sober, if I don't get this time, I don't have another chance, you know. And like, I wrote a letter to Andrew and asked him for a teaching
Andrew
job.
Andrew Alexander, yeah.
He says, no problem. Marty DeMott, like, just welcomes me in and says, we'll take you through it one class at a time. It'll be fine.
How was it coming back to that experience, coming back to Second City, you know, in a different light, trying to go through recovery?
I always say, you know, I was a terrible teacher, you know. I was, and Marty kept saying, you know, you can't say this to a, you know, to a student. You can't call them stupid, and you can't call them, you know, you can't call them names. And, you know, he just give me back rubs and say, and slowly but surely, it's like, you know, everybody belongs here. You know, got to treat them with love and kindness. Give them positive notes, and then give them a little bit of like what they've done wrong.
You learn how to teach from Del Close. There's a certain genius there, but there's also a rough part there.
Yeah, but I had to; those edges had to be worn off.
Yeah, right.
Because I thought my job was to weasel out people who didn't belong on stage. What happens in an improv class is something spiritual, and they get bonded for life.
Right.
And it's a wonderful experience. And a lot of them may not have, you know, those kinds of aspirations to be on stage or do television or movies or theater or anything. But the idea of like Marty, slowly but surely, like just love, just give them love. They all belong there. They're all one. He turned me into the better teacher because I did come in. I was full of anger. I thought I knew it all. You know, I was like, yeah, I deserve this job back. I was still angry.
I'm back.
It takes a million years to just, you know, dissolve all that anger that I had while I was drinking and drugging, self-hatred and stuff.
So, Tim O'Malley is my guest tonight, longtime Chicago improviser and Second City vet. He was on stage at the main stage in the 80s, and now he's teaching. And he's also directing a young group called Scantron, which is performing two shows at the Marty DeMott Theater.
As well as the ongoing show at the Crowd Theater on Thursday nights at 10 p.m. for $5.
When we come back, I want to talk to you about that because you're now in a position where you're putting together, you know, molding young minds to the idea of improv, and you're sort of there Del Close. So it'd be interesting to get your take on how the roles have reversed for you. Tim O'Malley, my guest tonight on Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight, Tim O'Malley, longtime Second City veteran who is now teaching improv and directing new work from a group called Scantron, which is going to be on stage February 6th and 13th at the Marty DeMott Theater, as well as Thursday nights at 10 o'clock at the Crowd Theater on Broadway. All right, so what does it mean to you to be doing this work, to have a bunch of young people who are wide-eyed and ready to try and put together some comedy? What does it mean for you?
You know what? It reminded me of when I had you guys. Mm-hmm. And do you remember us talking about, like, going out and setting up your own theater?
It's a big thing. A big thing in Second City is they say, don't try to get a job at Second City coming out of the conservatory. Go out, make your name, work in the real world, see what you can do.
A couple years.
And you'll be back.
Right. Right. And if you're good, you know, you'll get busted up by auditions or something like that. Or if you're really good, you'll stay together and form a company like Schadenfreude did.
Right.
Schadenfreude Media.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So
Scantron had that. Spencer Catherine Trudel started the group. She's very strong woman. She's fights for women's rights. So we just added Tori Titmus to the group, very strong woman. And up until then, we had only Spencer and four men. But Spencer was, you know what I mean? She formed the group. She plays strong, powerful women on both sides.
So is it improv or sketch?
It's improv and sketch.
Okay.
But these guys just, you know, they were able to go to dark stuff. And I loved it. And so I started to bring it out. So this is a little Delish in the sense that I said, you know, nobody's going into, like, the macabre.
You're not in that life and death moment that you guys were sort of trained to be at.
Yeah, well, just like the scenes are getting, like, they're not afraid to play scary or odd or experimental or creatures or dark stuff, you know, dysfunctional families, you know what I mean, and dysfunctional relationships.
As a director, I mean, is it important, that's part of your job as a director to encourage that kind of work, to say,
I saw
take
what
a
I
risk.
Liked,
yeah.
And I brought it out. I'm like, no one's doing this kind of improv. No one's doing kind of weird, scary. You know what I mean? Because a couple of pieces that they've scripted and a couple of pieces they have improvised, like some of the audiences have said, like, that was a little scary tonight. And that's exactly what I want to hear because that was what they did best. So I try to draw that out. So I love working with these guys because I'll just side coach a little bit, like, keep going. You know, there's a sketch they improvised last week about Tinder. Guy and a girl on a Tinder date, and they just get so aggressive with each other about comparing how many people they have slept with that they're red-faced, and they're almost it just gets very dark very fast and kind of sexual tension, you know.
I love the role reversal. I mean, I'm kind of teased that out before the break about the concept of you being you know, in Del Close's living room to now trying to bring that out of young people. Do you like that role? I mean, is that a role
this
that you're comfortable
happened.
With
I mean, Scantron came together and brought that to me. You know what I mean? I don't say yes to a lot of groups that ask me to join them. I just loved these people. And so it's not what I do normally. It's just what came out of them. And so this is why I really think they're unique. They're different than pretty much anything you're going to see improv-wise because they go so dark. So it's not like I go around looking for groups to turn into like these dark caverns of murderous sexual behavior and stuff. It just happened to come out in this group, and that's why I love them and looking forward to them having great shows.
Do you see yourself having more of a role in directing where you get together with groups? And I mean, is that something you see not only just at groups but when it comes to Second City, like getting more involved in direction as opposed to just teaching?
I would like to, but they have a directing program, and they really like the younger guys coming up, you know, to go through the directing program and stuff like that. But I do enjoy the fact that, like, a young comedy group could come to me and we could develop something together.
Tim O'Malley's my guest tonight here on The Download. Let's take a break for the news. We'll come back. I want to ask you about some of the issues that are happening in improv. I mean, just in the last couple of weeks, we've seen a lot of activity surrounding the idea that this is really a male-dominated field, and it's coming out
there
with
it.
Well, we'll talk more about it. We'll come back over the news. I want to get your take on some of the issues that are happening in Chicago. Tim O'Malley, my guest tonight on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight, Tim O'Malley. Tim O'Malley, longtime improviser, actor, comedian, instructor, now director.
Professional clown.
Tim, really, I mean, you made your name as a main stage actor, but you also had your show God Show, which was in 2003, which I want to talk about.
Some guy's trying to get me to do it on Broadway.
Really?
Yeah, so we'll see how that
well,
goes.
Well, I mean, what's great about it is it's a show that you wrote about your time in addiction and recovering from it, and it's called God Show because, you know, you say the reason you were able to stay sober, and you've been sober coming up on 20 years, congratulations, is because of God.
Yeah.
How so?
You know, it's hard to explain to people that don't have any faith. I mean, maybe they're, you know, they believe in humankind and stuff like that. But, you know, what recovery allows you to do is to nurture your spirituality. It's not religious. It's definitely just the idea of, like, something out there is helping me. And it's as simple as for me to understand that, like, I would have never gotten hired at Second City unless Cheryl Sloan and a couple other people that liked me opened the door for me. Like, I didn't get hired by Second City. I was allowed in. Someone opened the door. That whole idea of, like, I didn't get this on my own. Doors open for you by the universe, whatever you want to call it. So, like, that was my beginning, like, concept. And then the idea, like, that I could stop was just completely out of my thought process before, you know, 2 weeks before I got into treatment. And then 6 months out after some steps in recovery and stuff like that, I was free of the obsession. I wasn't thinking about it anymore. Mm. It wasn't even in my head. And I had tools to stop, you know, whenever I thought about picking up or whatever. And I had help, and you get tons of help. And that's what, you know, support is all about.
You know, for you, I mean, you spent so much time in circles with Del Close and with Second City and that sort of sex, drugs, and rock and roll kind of environment.
In Burton Place,
right. That lifestyle leads itself, even now. I mean, it leads itself to let's go to the bar afterwards. You know what? Let's experiment with drugs, you know, drugs and sex and rock and roll, the whole bit, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's really, it's almost all of comedy is based on this idea that it happens after midnight. I mean, there's something to it. So how do you, as a recovering addict who has come back to the art form, how do you keep yourself clear from the trappings of that so many comedians fall into?
You know, I just go home.
good advice. Go home, everybody.
You know, the idea of my students in the first few years used to say, you should come over to the Old Town Ale House with us. And I'd say, you know, I don't drink anymore. Or I'd say, you know, you wouldn't want to see what happens if I drank, you know. And so, but it's really funny that no one asks me anymore. I don't know if it's detoxed a lot out of casts, it, you know, out of certain places. But there is that concept. But plumbers say that, you know, hey, this is a working guy's world. You go to the bar and then you go home. You know, or, you know, lawyers
right,
say
right,
that.
Right.
Oh, you know, I get a lot of work done at the bar. You know, I make a lot of, you know, like, and it's all total garbage. Because they think, you know, oh, I have to be around. I have to rub elbows. But we know people who rubbed elbows with famous people and they never got anywhere and they ended up dead. And the famous people ended up dead. You know what I mean? And the whole idea that you have to, you know, imbibe. Like, nobody gives a crap what you're drinking if you sit at a bar anyway.
Right. Let me ask you this.
And surely you can walk away from any drug use if you have the will.
We're talking with Tim O'Malley here, a longtime Second City vet who's directing a show, a group called Scantron, which is at the Marty DeMott Theater February 6th and the 13th. There's been a lot going on. I mean, it's always kind of been known in Chicago and in improv and comedy as it's sort of a male-dominated field, that men, white men, just dominate and almost just overtake everything else when it comes to improv. You go to see IO or you go to Second City, it's always white dudes. Just everywhere.
There's more and more diversity. There's more and more.
How is that coming? Because
gender equality going on, at least at Second City there is.
So,
you know, some casts recently have been more women than men. at Second City. I mean, they're really working at, you know, combating that and changing the thought process. I mean, I think ever since Tina Fey, Amy Poehler had books out, it's really influenced the young comedic female mind. And my classes are, in a large part, more women than men most of the time now. As far as, you know, misogyny and mistreatment of women, you know, inside casts. I know, you know, it stems from this ancient thought of, you know, women aren't funny.
Yeah, it comes from, and this is a well-reported story that, you know, there's a sect or area of improv and comedy where some men believe that women just aren't funny.
Yeah, but it's ancient poison.
Ironically,
some
it
of
does,
the Amy Poehler doesn't make you, you know, pee in your pants every time
come,
she comes up with a character.
Back to the founding geniuses, and one of them being Del Close. You know, from the top down, when you talk about the philosophy of improv and the people who taught it, he was one of these leaders who said no.
That was just because he got burned by a couple of women that he loved, you know what I mean? And that's just my opinion. And so he started to spread stuff. I mean, even in Something Wonderful Right Away, you know, he spoke about Joan Rivers being a bad improviser, and we used to, people used to use it in class as like an example of bad improv, and it never happened. I listened to hours and hours of tapes for editing the Second City Almanac book, you know, mm-hmm. and Joan Rivers was hysterical, and she was a great improviser, and she was very, very funny, you know, and Elaine May was funny as hell. And, you know, from what I know, he was in love with both those people, you know. And the story is that, you know, in the scene in, what's the movie, Dustin Hoffman, Mrs. Robinson, remember he's pounding on the window going, Elaine, Elaine, Elaine.
Yeah.
That comes from the true story of, you know, Del stalking Elaine's wedding.
Is that true? I never knew that.
Yeah, because the director was Mike Nichols.
Yeah, Mike Nichols.
So
there's a site that's coming out that women are able to anonymously tell of their stories of being in cast, being approached after shows, having misogyny and frankly harassment happen at the hands of men in the improv community. And not just the improv community, but in the stand-up comedy community, in the sketch comedy community, just essentially the comedy community here in Chicago. And a lot of people are going to social media to talk about their stories, to open up. But what it really does, it shines a light on something that has been happening in Chicago for decades. But you say it's getting better. And frankly,
I think it is. I mean, you guys had great women in Schadenfreude.
Kate, I won one woman, yeah.
Yeah, and there was never – and loved and respected her because she was funny, talented, yeah. And a strong woman. I mean, I think what we need to instill and continue to instill in all our students is respect. I think all we can do is just keep, you know, promoting the idea of, like, strong women, you know, speak out, teaching guys, you know, to treat women, you know, equally.
You know, on stage, I mean, to be a great improviser, to be a great comedian, respect is a big part of it. And you know that. You taught me that. And the idea of what happens off stage is, you know, respect and how
yeah, but
about
I,
you
I,
being
I
a
cover
person.
That in
yeah,
class.
Right.
I'm like, you know, if you want to bitch about the show, go to the bar. You know, I mean, but and how you treat each other before and after a show is really important. Like right before a show, keep the back, you know, stage area clear of any of your outside garbage. You know, no one's got the right to say that sucked or you sucked. You know, to take that to someone else away from the place. Mm-hmm. I try to cover all that stuff. Etiquette, like Donnie DiPolo used to teach us, you know, he used to tell us all about before and after is just as important. You know, none of this emailing each other and giving each other notes. And, you know, now we got social media and stuff mm-hmm. like that. I can imagine that people get abused or someone gets said something about.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to include that when they get in the upper levels, you know.
Let me ask you this, Tim. You know, you've been a part of the comedy community for a long time now. I mean, you talked about getting into class in 1979, 1980. You know, how has it changed over time? I mean, do you feel like, you know, it's the same as sort of like it was at the Earl of Old Town? Or do you feel like we've evolved in 2016?
Well, everything changes. You know, what we thought was funny was one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. It's like classic writing. There's a difference between a sketch that's going to last for a long time or a television show that's going to last. And you and I, being writers and comedians, can spot it. We can go, this is classic writing. This mm-hmm. is a great show. You know, I'm going to watch this. And so the idea of trying to teach young people how to think in a classic way, you know, start thinking in terms of classic writing so it's timeless. It, you know, if it's not a satirical piece based on something current event, try to write pieces that will last, that you could do, or characters you can do for a long
forever,
time.
Yeah, right.
So it's really important to try to get that across. But when someone's stuck on the newest popular craze because they fall in love with something that's their age or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, they'll say, you know, I love this show or that show. And I'll say, have you ever seen, you know, this? And they're like, no, I've never seen that. Like a young writing student, I asked her if she ever heard of Joss Whedon. And she said, no, I don't know who that is.
How's what?
That's young. I thought you were going to say Larry Gelbart or something. Like Joss Whedon, come on. That's...
When I said there's university classes being taught about how he changed television to kind of classic television. They consider him like the father of new television.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, have you ever seen Buffy or Angel or any of those things? Because it's like comedy, drama, and dark. And she's like, no, I haven't. You know, it's hard to explain to someone. You know, I had a student who thought, you know, who was the guy that was running around making fun of people?
That's a lot of different people.
Sasha.
Oh, Sacha Baron Cohen. Yeah.
Right. And, and the student was like, he's a genius. You know, he's going to be around forever. And I'm like, well, he's doing his humor at the expense of other people. And this is going to die. And I can't explain to you why walking around and making fun of other people isn't like Jackass. I mean, there are people that like it. But when you're 15 years old, what you like. And when you're 25
when you're 30,
or something,
right,
you like. So to answer your question, and what you're 35... You know, you start to get this sense of what's going to last, you know?
Tim O'Malley is a longtime Second City veteran and main stage actor who now is a teacher and a director. He's directing the group Scantron Improv and Sketch, which will be February 6th and the 13th at the Marty DeMott Theater. And they're also up at the Crowd Theater on Broadway Thursday nights at 10. Tim, thanks for coming in. Thanks for talking about your
great
story.
To have, great
good to see
be
you.
Here. Great to talk to you, Justin. It's great to see you.